Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We are in the holy month of Ramadan, the month of fasting. As practicing Muslims, it is crucial for us to understand the true meaning of the Ramadan fast, what we aim to achieve by fasting. The Quran clearly states that taqwa, or self-restraint, is the ultimate aim of fasting. If I were to put what the Quran defines as the ultimate aim of fasting in the language of Muslim Sufis, the point of the Ramadan fast is not to starve the stomach, rather to starve nafs, or the lower self, the ego. The less we feed our ego, the less selfish we become, and we will have greater capacity for moral behavior. We will have greater capacity to practice compassion. Compassion is a critical Islamic teaching. The Quran holds that the supreme attribute of God is Rahmah, or Rahmat in Farsi, compassion in English. Allah is full of compassion for His creation. And we humans, as the image bearers of God, must practice compassion in daily life. That's what Islam teaches. I thought it would be fitting to talk about compassion today. Since compassion is such a vast topic and an important one, I will split my talk into two sermons. Today, inshallah, I will talk about history, the history behind the emergence of compassion in religion, how compassion became the central ethic in all major world religions. The history of the evolution of religion, I think, will give us a better appreciation for the importance of compassion in religious life. And inshallah, next time, I will discuss compassion in Islam, and I will offer some practical tips for incorporating compassion in everyday life. So let's begin. Let's talk about history, the history of compassion and its infusion in world religions. Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Taoism, Buddhism, Hinduism, they all advocate compassion. With no exception, they demand compassion from their followers. Originally, say 3,000 years ago and before, compassion was not viewed as critical in religious life. Yes, many of you may find it kind of bewildering that back then, 3,000 years ago, compassion was not all that prominent in religious thinking. Back then, ritual and animal sacrifice were the main sources of religious meaning for people. Religion back then was mostly concerned with rituals. Indian, Chinese, Greek, and Israelite religions, they all had elaborate rituals, elaborate ceremonies that ordinary people, priests, and kings took part in. That was the centerpiece of religion for people back then. Rituals were the centerpiece of religion because religion was mostly outward oriented, not inwardly oriented. And that's a really important distinction. Back then, the focus of religion was outside. People always looked outside for meaning. not inwardly, not inside. Now, some rituals were outright violent. Violence was actually imbued in religious rituals. This was the case, for example, in Aryan rituals. As you probably know, Aryans moved from southern Russia and settled first in Iran and then in India. Raiding and looting was a part of Aryan rituals. Aryans of India had a ritual called Soma, S-O-M-A, Soma. In this ritual, the Soma ritual, juice was extracted from various plants, and then ritual participants drank the juice and took part in religious ceremonies. If a new king were to be throned, he would drink the Soma juice, and then he would go on a raid. He would raid a neighboring community, neighboring city or state. If he returned with plunder, the priests would bless his kingship. He had earned the title of king. When the king arrived back safely from raid with spoils of battle, he had become one with the supreme reality called Brahman. Now, many of you may be familiar with this notion of Brahman in Hindu religious tradition, and this concept, Brahman, has evolved over time. But back then, in particular, Brahman was not a god or deva, but a force that held the universe together. Brahman stopped the elements of the universe from fragmentation, from falling apart. Brahman was the force that enabled all things to become strong and to expand. The new king that came back from the successful raid would now unite with Brahman. He would embody Brahman, and he would be the force that held the kingdom together. He would then enable his kingdom and his people to prosper and expand. That was the meaning of the Soma ritual, which often was riddled with violence. But religion started to experience a massive transformation in the Axial Age. The Axial Age is the most significant, the most defining period in history of world religion. Historians call the period roughly between 800 BC, 800 before Christ, to 200 BC, the Axial Age. So that's the definition of it. This 600-year period between 800 BC and 200 BC is called the Axial Age. The German philosopher Karl Jaspers coined the term Axial Age. This 600-year period witnessed the introduction of major world religions. In Persia, with Zoroastrianism, in India, China, and Israel, in all these regions, sages independently and simultaneously laid the spiritual foundations of humanity. By the way, sage, S-A-G-E, refers to a profoundly wise person. And I'm going to use this term or this word sage a lot today. Sage is someone with deep insight into the inner workings of the human mind and soul. Sage is also a spiritual mentor. For the purpose of my talk today, I will include prophets in the category of sages as well. So when I say sages, I mean the likes of Confucius and Prophet Abraham. I would call all of them the sages for the purpose of my talk today. Now, all major world religions, Taoism and Confucianism in China, Buddhism and Hinduism in India, monotheism in Israel, they all have their roots in the Axial Age. By Israel, I don't mean the Zionist nation in the Middle East today. I mean the 12 tribes of Israel, or the descendants of Prophet Jacob. So, it was the Axial Age that created the religious traditions that have continued to nourish humanity to the present day. Christianity and Islam, the two dominant world religions today, were born out of the seeds planted by the Axial Age prophets of Israel. In fact, Islam is the final flowering of the Axial Age. Food for thought. It is fascinating that we humans have never grown beyond the initial religious insights of the Axial Age. We expanded our philosophical knowledge, we vastly expanded our technological knowledge, but when it comes to religious insight and spirituality, humanity never grew beyond the initial religious insights of the Axial Ages. Later generations further developed those insights, but never went beyond them. The great transformation of the Axial Age changed the character of religion. Sages preached that the only way to encounter God, the only way to encounter Nirvana in Buddhism, the only way to encounter Brahman in Hinduism, or the way of heaven in Chinese religious tradition, was to live a moral life. The only way to encounter the divine or God was to practice compassion toward others. And this is key. That is the path to the divine. And forever, this idea stuck to world religions. Now, I want to emphasize again that this massive transformation occurred independently in three regions of the world, in Israel, China, and in India. So this is critical. This transformation independently happened in all these regions. The sages did not copycat from each other. And that tells us something about human nature, that morality and compassion seems to be part and parcel to human nature. You may wonder what was the driver of this great transformation. What was the impetus behind the shift of focus from ritual to morality and the spirituality of compassion? What was the driver? What was the impetus? War and violence. War and violence. The spiritual revolution of the Axial Age occurred against a backdrop of turmoil, migration, conquest, war and violence. In China, in Israel, in the Middle East, in India, violence had reached unprecedented levels. The world had never seen violence on such a scale. Iron had been discovered, and then iron made its way to warfare, and iron weaponry made wars much more lethal, much more deadly. As a result of the introduction of iron into warfare, now there was immense suffering everywhere. And that's the backdrop for this great transformation in world religion. The horror of war and violence, the unprecedented scale of suffering, intensified the quest for a new religious vision, for a new spirituality. Sages everywhere started a quest, a search for a response to the rising aggression and violence. Now, for sure, the sages were not from the same cloth. Their views of divine were different. Their rituals were different. Their styles and their living circumstances were different. But here is the main point that I want to share with you. Their quest, their journey, led all of them to two fundamental truths. Absolutely astonishing. They all came across two truths. There was a remarkable consensus in their call to two things. First, abandonment of selfishness, and secondly, a spirituality of compassion. One more time, all the sages in different parts of the world came to exactly the same conclusion, exactly the same set of teachings: abandonment of selfishness and the spirituality of compassion. And that's the crux of the great axial transformation in religion. Again, it is astonishing that the sages independently came to the same conclusion that egotism was largely responsible for violence. Egotism, unbridled selfishness, is responsible for violence. And to counter the violence, the sages proposed compassion. They designed different practical programs to allow people eradicate their egotism, to eradicate their selfishness through compassion. These two key teachings left an indelible impression on religion forever. Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Taoism, Hinduism, they all emphasize abandonment of selfishness and practical compassion. Every single one of these religions emphasize these two key teachings, and they owe it to the Axial Age sages. But that's not all that the Axial Age sages discovered. They discovered more insights than abandonment of selfishness and the spirituality of compassion. In fact, as it turns out, the sages had three other key insights that bolstered the spirituality of compassion and morality in religion. What were those three other key insights? The first one, the experience of suffering. And this is important for all of us really to pay attention to. If you want to know how morality came to be It's the centerpiece of religion I'm about to tell you. The experience of suffering must lead to the appreciation of other people's pain. That's what the sages everywhere concluded. If I experience pain and suffering in my life, that should lead me to appreciate the pain and suffering of other people. Let me give you one example from the book of Leviticus in the Hebrew Bible. Now, the book of Leviticus was written in about 1440 before Christ, like almost 1500 years before Jesus. Now, the passage that I'm going to read you dictates a law to the people of Israel. This book of Leviticus is just full of laws for Jewish people. And this passage indicates one of those laws. Here it is. If a stranger lives with you in your land, do not molest him. You must treat him like one of your own people and love him as yourself, for you were strangers in Egypt. The critical point is mentioned at the end. Because you were strangers in Egypt. In other words, the law required Jews not to mistreat strangers. It appealed to their own experience of suffering in exile when they lived in Egypt, when they were strangers in that land themselves. Now, this law is clearly based on empathy, or in Farsi language, hamdeli. This law is clearly based on empathy. Nowadays, we hear so much about empathy. It's everywhere. Everybody talks about empathy. Well, I don't know whether you know it or not, but the word empathy is quite new in the English language. It was introduced into English language about 110 years ago by a psychologist, actually. But the idea of empathy dates back to the Axial Age. In the passage that I cited from the book of Leviticus, that law is all about empathy. What does empathy mean? Put yourself in the shoe of the other and imagine what he's going through, and then act accordingly. Your suffering and pain must teach you to feel with others. And that's the critical insight that Axial Age sages discovered. Empathy is crucial for moral development. And this takes us to the second radical insight that the Axial Age spirituality produced. What is that insight? Today we call the golden rule of ethics. Again, the term golden rule is fairly new, but the idea of the golden rule was first discovered by sages in the Axial Age. In fact, Confucius, the Chinese sage who lived in the 5th century BC, was among the first in recorded history to teach the golden rule to his disciples. Confucius created a rule called Shu in Chinese language, S-H-U, S-H-U, Shu. And here is the formulation of Shu according to Confucius. Never do to others what you would not like them to do to you. Sounds familiar? That's what today we call the golden rule of ethics, and that's the teaching of Confucius in the 5th century before Christ to his disciples. Shu is rendered consideration in English, to be considerate towards others. Shu simply means likening to oneself and acting accordingly towards others. Use your own feelings as a guide to your treatment of others. Hugely, hugely important step forward in human spiritual development. Use your own feelings as a guide to your treatment of others. Confucius believed that if Shu was practiced in politics by kings and princes, there would be no war, there would be no exploitation, there would be no subjugation, no mistreatment of common people. If the king or prince behaved toward other rulers, other states in this way, according to the rule of Shu, there would be no war, because the king would not like other kings to invade his land, right? All it took for him to put himself in the place of others. If kings and rulers practice Shu, according to Confucius, there will not be any exploitation of common people. Kings and emperors wanted to change the world by force and violence. They wanted to shape the world by force and violence. But Confucius argued that morality would change the world far more effectively than violence and warfare. I wish this wisdom would come across the minds of the movers and shakers of the world today, that compassion and morality can change our world far more effectively than force, violence, war, and destruction. Other sages in Israel and India also had a similar insight as Shu in the Confucian tradition. Again, this insight emerged independently among the sages in other parts of the world. And that's why the Golden Rule is perhaps the most consistent, the most prevalent, the most universal ethical principle in history. This Golden Rule is universal because pretty much sages, independent of each other, discovered it in different regions of the world. Now, the principle of Shu or Golden Rule evolved further later on. It evolved. It reached its final development in India and China, where sages argued that benevolence should be extended to the whole of humanity, not just one's family, one's tribe or nation. We need to be benevolent. We need to be compassionate towards all of humanity. If people did not cultivate benevolence and compassion towards the whole of the human race, then family love, love of family, patriotism, love of country, would soon degenerate into collective egotism. You see, we have something called egotism. There is another thing called collective egotism, where a whole nation together is selfish, egotistical. And that's precisely the problem we have today in modern nation states. The reason we have such high level of war and destruction around the world in Gaza today is because of the collective egotism of the Israeli people. Because collectively, They are egotistical. They put themselves over and above the Palestinian people. We're running out of time. Let me summarize. The sum total of the insights that I mentioned, abandonment of selfishness, empathy, and the golden rule, enable humans to practice compassion. So that's the basis of compassion. We humans are able to practice compassion if we abandon our selfishness, if we are empathic, and if we follow the golden rules. It was the Axial Age sages that made compassion the quintessential feature of spirituality, the main focus of authentic religious life. Today, a lot of religious people are overly obsessed with dogma, with doctrine. To many people, sadly, religiosity means holding some abstract metaphysical beliefs, such as the existence of God, life after death, hell, heaven, so on and so forth. These are doctrines. But Axial Age sages were not interested in dogma or doctrine at all. For them, religion was not dogma, it was compassion. For them, religion was compassion, empathy, and the golden rule. That's what religion meant to them. Religion was about behaving in a way that changed you at a profound level. Religion was about behaving in a way that emptied you of your selfishness, that filled you with a genuine concern for everybody. That's the hallmark of Axial Age religious transformation. Jesus and Muhammad were not interested in dogma. The Quran does not teach dogma or religious doctrine. The Quran demands action. Action that is rooted in compassion. And that's why almost always when the Quran speaks of iman or faith, it immediately follows it with amelun saliha, good deeds. Isn't that amazing? That's the Axial Age wisdom. Faith and good deeds in the Holy Quran are twins. They always go together. I strongly believe that we must revive this Axial Age insight in our religious communities today. Muslims, Jews, Christians, Hindus, they all need to go back to these amazing insights of Axial Age sages. Brothers and sisters, take it from me. What matters is not what you believe. What matters is what you do, how you behave. Well, we're out of time. I have to stop right here. Inshallah, next time, I will talk about compassion in Islam, the final flowering of the Axial Age, and also, inshallah, I will offer some practical tips for compassion that we can use in everyday life.